It's the Agribusiness Report from World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. Special guest today, Aubrey Betancourt with the Almond Alliance. First off, Randy Block with Cattle Facts talks about importance of great data.
And again, we didn't have good data to make good decisions as an industry in those days because we didn't know what the consumer was saying. Thank goodness we've had the checkoff that y'all have invested in that we can do the research and analysis. And we've got things like the quality audit that we've got these benchmarks that tell us how we're doing. Those have been critical, critical things that I don't believe our industry would have enjoyed the demand growth that we've experienced here over the last 15 to 20 years had we not had those programs that gave us the data. So I'd encourage you to continue to invest in your industry, and I think it will help us have a brighter future as we move down the road.
From the 2023 World Ag Expo, I'm Tony St. James. We ran into Aubrey Betancourt. Aubrey is the CEO of the Almond Alliance. Aubrey, great to see you.
It's great to see you, Tony.
Okay, so World Ag Expo, for anybody who has never attended, how would you describe that?
This is the Coachella of farming. This is the festival of festivals when it comes to farming and agriculture in the world. There is, I forget how many countries come in, dozens and dozens of countries, multiple states. This is the true collective of, maybe it's more like a South by Southwest, because this is the meeting of technology, of entertainment, of food, of innovation from all over the world in the business of feeding and sustaining our growing world right here in Tulare, California every year.
Okay, so when we talk about the Almond Alliance now, for those who don't know what the Almond Alliance is, what's that?
The Almond Alliance is the American Trade Association for American Almonds. Almond farmers in the United States produce 80% of the world's supply of almonds. We have a monopoly on the world. We're on 11 of 14 grocery aisles now. We have 7,600 farms, 90% of them family-owned and operated, 75% of them less than 100 acres, and we're producing 80% of the world's supply of almonds.
And when we talk about almond producers, there have been some challenges in the past with pretty much the entire crop grown in California. What are some of the challenges that the producers have been faced with here? Would water be near the top of the list?
Yeah, two things that we focus on, and I don't think they've changed really from one year to the next in the last 2 years. If we don't have a functioning supply chain and a reliable water supply, there's almost no point to anything else that we're doing. So those are our tier one priorities when it comes to almond farming in California and in the United States. So as we look at that, we've had an interesting change, and this is typical of the irrigated West. Here we are on a Mediterranean climate. That's what allows us to grow almonds the way we do. But that means we get our rain and snow in the winter, and then that sustains us through the drier summer months. We don't get rain in the summer like you do in other parts of the country. And so the ability to capture, store, and move that water reliably is what has made California one of the largest ag economies in the world, and what has allowed the almond industry specifically to become the size and scale that it is and to be sustained as such. When we have various regulatory challenges or actual challenges from years of drought that have allowed that system to not function in the way that it's supposed to, our reservoirs and our canals, it leaves us at a deficit, and it leaves us having to kind of get ourselves out of that. So when we get into a year like this, where we have abundant snow and abundant rain, 9 atmospheric rivers hitting us at the same time, it's about using that existing system and making sure the policies and the regulations that administer that system allow us to capture, store, and move that water for the time of dry and to recover our aquifers so that we can replenish that system and keep us in kind of this holistic, what I call total portfolio water management. And so we're really pushing in this space where we have a water supply structure and laws that are very out of date, trying to keep up with our modern technology and our modern demand and our modern relationship to the resource. So we're really working with state and federal officials to modernize not only the infrastructure itself, but also the policies that administer it to allow for more reliable water supply and true climate resilience is the ability to deliver water and the ability to protect from flood, and that's what the system's designed to do. So we need to update that to keep up with our new challenges and changes.
If I am counting correctly, you mentioned two there. Water one.
Yep.
The other is that infrastructure, supply chain. Mm-hmm. A year ago, you were ringing the warning bell. Actually, we were past the warning bell stage at that point with some issues that had popped up. where are we today?
Sure. So you're right. A year ago, we had a lot of product that was sold here in the United States, over 900 million pounds. To put that into scale, we produce anywhere from 2.6 to 3 billion pounds a year. We had almost 940 million pounds that we had sold but couldn't move. And our season starts August 1. So we had a short window to get this product off our shores. Why is that a crisis for us? Because our farmers don't get paid until that product gets delivered. And so we were facing a total socioeconomic tragedy if we couldn't get that product off our shores. Through some interesting dynamics, opening up new channels, what we call a multimodal, multi-port strategy, where before we sent almost 80% of our ag product out of the Port of Oakland, we decided, well, let's meet the boats where they are. If they aren't going to come to Oakland and pick up our product, let's go down to L.A. and get on the boat there. Let's go out to Houston and get on the boat there. Let's go out to Norfolk and Savannah and Newark and get on the boat there. Well, how are we going to get there? Well, now we go multimodal. Okay, trucks are great. How about rail? We partnered with the Union Pacific, started moving product in containers around to get them closer to our farms, away from the congestion at the ports, and get our product out through other avenues and channels. We were able to move a lot of that product. We had some issues with port strikes and some labor issues that maybe have slowed us down a little bit. But now we have more of what I call Legos on the table. So this year, we do have a lot of crops sitting again. We have about about 800 million pounds that we need to move. That being said, we're ahead of the game, and we have new partners, and we have new strategy. So we feel a little bit more confident in the ability to move the product, but this year the global market's different. And so now trade is rising as a higher priority for us, and so the ability to sell product when the dollar is so strong as an export crop is a little difficult. But our industry, I would tell you, they're resilient. They know these are tough times, and we're just going to need to keep moving product in order for us to get through this phase. Same as the water. We got to get through the drought to get to the flood so we can get into the next phase and right size and keep moving forward.
So I've really kind of guided this conversation through things that I know are going on, but obviously inside the industry you have a better view, a unique aspect, if you will. What else is on your radar for the rest of this year?
So I would say kind of piggybacking off of that, the supply chain is clunky, but it's moving. We've got these new avenues. We're going to keep pushing product. But the trick now is selling that product. So trade is top of the scroll now. Part of that functioning supply chain is having a functioning market. And so we look at, you know, everything from the retaliatory tariffs. This is something that we've seen come up. It still is continuing to drive. I don't have a problem with protecting American jobs. I have a problem with protecting American jobs at the expense of other American jobs. And that's kind of the dynamic we're in there. So that's in that category. Then we have our non-tariff barriers. These are some of the MRL rules and the irregularities across Europe that are dictating to us, and constantly changing in the rules, how we need to grow our product, package our product, treat our product, get it overseas. We need some consistency in that space. These are, I think, some opportunities that we want to see addressed in the current Congress with this administration. So again, if you don't want to deal with retaliatory tariffs, fine, I get it. Let's deal with some things that we can control. And the last one is let's open new markets. We actually have a great new developing market out there, I think, in a lot of parts of the world, that if we created some trade advantages, we'd really do some great good of getting our growing product to a growing world that is demanding our product. Almonds don't have a demand problem. We have a market and a shipping problem right now. We have people that want to buy our product. We just need, I think, a little more grease to get them out and get them to them. And there's this great new population that I think is going to really appreciate the product and the diversity of the product that we have as this high, stable protein that we can keep and deliver any time of year.
So if we want to learn more about the Almond Alliance, keep up with what you're doing, can we do that online?
You bet. You can find us at almondalliance.org and across any of your favorite social media platforms. We put out videos once a week. We try to just take this complicated world and make it so people can understand it. We think almonds are pretty darn cool, not just because it's what we do and what we grow, but we are one of the largest exports for ag in the United States. Actually, we're in the top four. And so when we talk about, you know, needing to get back out into the world, that's about getting America back out in the world. And so we want to partner with all our friends in ag all across the country and continue to do that.
Great to see you. Thanks
Likewise.
For your time.
You bet. Have a good show.
Again, it's Aubrey Betancourt. She's CEO of the Almond Alliance from the 2023 World Ag Expo in Tulare, California. I'm Tony St. James.
Life doesn't come with guarantees. But working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Randy Block is president and CEO of Cattle Facts on record prices.
Look at the growth in beef demand that we've experienced in here and where all of that growth has come from over the course of the last 15 years. It's all on the choice and higher grades, isn't it? All of the demand growth. Look at the red line on this chart. That's select. If you look at the demand curve in here on select, it's the same spot it was in 1998 when we were at our low water mark in demand. We've taken our high quality fed beef production from 55% choice and prime to 83% choice and prime. And Kevin showed you the charts a few minutes ago. We have record spreads. That tells you the consumers love what we're putting in front of. And we have to continue to stay focused on that. When we look at these protein considerations, this comes out of the consumer beef tracker data. I think this is great data. And again, this goes back to your checkoff dollars of what we're doing out here. What's the number one driver of purchase decisions? It's great tasting. What's the number two? It's safe. What's number three? It's a great value proposition. And you can see as we move on through here, these are the things that I would say to you. This is why we've been winning the battle of wallet, of consumer spending here over time, is because we have a great tasting product and it's safe. People can trust it, not only here, but around the globe. Now, we're going to see prices in here as we move forward move significantly higher. They're going to move significantly higher. I mean, you're not going to see these kind of supply shocks and not see the needle move and move pretty quickly. So you do need to be prepared for that. We will see record high prices at all classes of cattle here over the course of the next several years. And again, it will tend to move pretty quick. We still will actually be in the new highs this year. We'll be making new highs before the year is over when we think about fed cattle prices, et cetera. Feeders and calves, maybe not, but fed cattle prices are certainly going to be there. Once we see a little bit moderation in the feed costs, we'll likely start to see that transfer over to calf and feeder cattle values as well. It really does come back to the profitability, though, doesn't it? I mentioned the cow-calf profitability. It's not been great enough. At the overall industry level, when we look at overall profitability, when we look at accumulated profitability, it's obviously been better, but it still needs to get better. It needs to get better if we're going to grow the profitability at that cow-calf level to where it's sustainable. That's something that we need to expect. So we'll see more dollars that'll be flowing back into that here over the course of the next few years.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer health care benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative health care solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
It's been said defense wins championships, but in farming, playing defense doesn't pencil out. When growing cotton, you'll score big when you cut your input cost on seed and have the flexibility to apply multiple modes of action. Growing conventional cotton puts you on the offense because at the end of the season, you'll catch and delete your cotton, which helps save 50% or more on your seed costs next year. Find out why more farmers are going conventional and winning big. Call Brownfield Seed or go online, brownfieldseed.com. Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Aubrey Betancourt with the Almond Alliance.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Australian and Russian wheat production increases from the previous month highlight USDA's latest world wheat outlook.
Australia's production, we raised that 1.4 million tons to 38 million tons. The current forecast would be the third consecutive record large crop in Australia. With Russia, there we raised our production forecast a million tons, so it's now currently at 92 million tons. That also for Russia would be record large.
World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekanowski says the increase in global wheat production is reflected in the world balance sheet, with a rise in most categories month over month. The U.S. wheat supply and demand estimate saw minimal changes, but one that was noticed.
Season average market price, we lowered it 10 cents a bushel. The current price of $9 per bushel, that would still be a record.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.